Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Monday morning. And we head to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in our friend Corey Curtis from News 2, brought to you by Tennessee Men's Clinic. Corey, good morning. How are you?
I am a delight, Robert. How are you?
Doing outstanding. Appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning.
I know.
I'm glad you know. Let's begin on the Mike Vrabel front. Right now, the Patriots are 8-2. He is the favorite, according to the odds, to win NFL Coach of the Year. Right now on FanDuel, Drake May is co-favorite to win MVP of the National Football League, and they're in first place in the AFC East and have won 7 games in a row. What do you make of what's going on in New England, the job that Vrabel has done here, and how sustainable is this for him as they go out through the rest of the season here?
Well, look, if you got a good young quarterback, you can win a lot of football games. And, not to say that, well, just anybody could do it. Drake May's really good. I mean, he made a big mistake in the game and got away with it yesterday with the interception in the end zone. But, you know, they've had a very fortunate schedule to this point. They do have 2 really nice wins, beating Buffalo and now beating Tampa. But I don't think anybody's ever questioned Vrabel's ability to coach. I mean, we all said the same thing, you know, when he left here. His teams were always prepared. He always knew the rule book, you know, inside and out. If anything got Mike Vrabel in trouble, to me, it was loyalty and just being overly loyal to certain players and certain coaches. And you know, just roster decisions that didn't go too well because he believed in people. But you know, when Ryan Tannehill was playing well, you know, Mike Vrabel, you know, looked really good. And that's the way it goes. You know, you generally have good players, you win games if you're a good coach. Now there are bad coaches who don't win with good players. So there's that too. But it's the combination of a few things. They made some good roster moves in the offseason as well, and it's all come together for him. It's now him being the favorite as well. You know, look, the nationally they love Mike Vrabel, so this is absolutely what they want. I mean, there are other coaches who certainly should be in the conversation.
I will push back, Corey, on no one question. I mean, we'll still get Titans fans here that are like, "Oh, he was what, 6-18? Is that what he finished?
Yep.
6-18 last 24. Why is he so great?
Well, I mean, his preparation for games was good. His knowledge of the rules was good. His preparation of his team, you know, having them ready to play was good. His roster became not good. And that was the part, like I said, that and some of the coaching decisions he made, those are the things that were not great that ultimately got him into trouble.
I think we all agree on this. I'm just saying, you know.
Okay.
But this is also the kind of year that probably blows that narrative up a little bit, right? The whole he all of a sudden forgot how to coach at the end of his tenure.
Yeah. Well, look, none of these guys I don't think have ever forgotten how to coach except for Belichick. None of them have ever forgotten how to coach.
Yeah, they're going to a bowl game.
You know, but you know, you see historically, you know, it's usually tied to players. I mean, you know, players ultimately win games, and when you have good players, you ultimately win games. You know, when John Robinson had his good run from 2016 to 2019, you know, the Titans built a team that won a bunch of games, and then when he had a bunch of bad drafts and a bunch of free agent decisions and trades, the roster went to hell and the Titans went to hell, and they have not made the decision since then to correct it. It is not a mystery. It is not a mystery. Barry Switzer won a Super Bowl. All right. Barry Switzer was not a great NFL head coach, but he had a phenomenal roster that he did it with. Now, you know, the year Mike Vrabel won NFL Coach of the Year with the Titans, didn't he use 90 some players?
Yep. Yeah. NFL record. I mean, 89.
Yeah.
Or something.
I mean,
like that.
Yeah. That's a great job. That's a great job holding things together. That's a great job having guys ready that you just got in the door or maybe playing in above their heads. You know, so you know there are things you do that are a good job and things you do that are not.
So let me ask you this: We heard from Mike Borgonzi last week. He talked about a lot of things. I thought he was really good, but I mean, you know, the main theme was you look at the roster right now. There's a lot of work left to be done for the Tennessee Titans, as we all know. So in that process, how crucial in your mind is landing the number one overall pick this year from the standpoint of being able to trade out of it and building through the draft that way? Which, by the way, good weekend for the Titans on that front. They are now back in the number one spot.
Yeah, three teams started the weekend with one win. Now we're down to one. So that's, and the Jets won despite throwing for 54 yards, which seems impossible, but they did it. Look, it's important. I think I don't know what the number of quarterback needy teams is right now. It's probably like five or six. Does that sound about right?
Right around there, yeah.
Yeah, but there aren't going to be – I don't think there's going to be five or six quarterbacks necessarily worth trading up for. There'll be a couple that pan out in the process. So I think as far as acquiring not just picks, but acquiring high picks, you know, that's you know, ideally you want to trade with somebody else who's picking in the top five, you know, because that gets you still picking in the top five at more high picks. That's much better than trading down to 13 or 15 and getting one of those guys. This way you still get an elite premium player and you acquire the picks that you need, because this team does need elite premium players. They just don't need first round picks. They need high first round picks. They need cornerstones to the franchise. They need guys that people put their names on jerseys and wear them to the stadium. Okay. And I realize you can get those guys outside of the top five or top six, but generally it helps to pick there. And so I think from that aspect of ensuring that you're still picking within the top five or six, even after a trade, it's hugely important.
I agree. And I will not, because then we're treading too close to the draft talk. But so I will not mention how they should trade down and get Reuben Bain. I will not. I'm not even going to go there.
Bain!
But I'm just saying, that may be something we talk about in the future.
Look, everything on the edge is what they need. I mean, there's no question about that. I mean, whether it's wide receiver or cornerback or edge rusher, that's what this draft needs to be all about.
Every position that requires cleats is what they need.
That's pretty true. Earlier someone was like, what position do you feel – yeah, there's a question for you, Corey.
Yeah.
What position – I mean, we'll take, like, Cam out of it, like – I mean, we had a call earlier. It was like, you're an idiot if you don't, if you're Titans, you don't go take Fernando Mendoza number one.
Did you watch that game Saturday?
I did.
Yeah.
What did you think of him for three quarters?
Well, that's what we've talked about already. It's like, he didn't look great. You know, he was great at the drive.
Yeah, he was great in the drive. But, you know, I've watched him a couple times now, and I haven't found him to be as athletic as everyone else seems to. Like, when he runs the football, I'm like, he doesn't look that athletic. I don't know.
I thought he looked really fast a couple times Saturday. Their first touchdown was like, geez, you know, it was a little bit of a stunner, like how fast I thought he looked there. But
I'm not in love. I guess that's all I'm going to say.
Yeah. No. I mean, there's always going to be someone who gets pushed to the top, which is what happened last year, and it's going to happen again this year. But in some years, it's like, you could have a shot at that guy. That's not what he is.
Yeah.
But he's not the greatest quarterback of all time. I mean, who knows?
He's not Andrew Luck. He's not Trevor Lawrence. He's not slam dunk. This guy's, you know, the number one pick. But I mean, he's there, and there's two or three other quarterbacks that are in the conversation. I'm sorry, I interrupted you. Go ahead.
No, that's okay. I was just gonna say so take quarterback out of it. What's the position group for the Tennessee Titans you feel best about?
That I feel best about?
Yeah. least needs addressing.
Safety.
Okay.
So, long snapper.
Very good there.
Yeah. You know, look.
Good returners. Punt kick returner, they're set.
I like the two young receivers, but you still need a one. I mean –
Yep.
You still need, if you can draft, if there's a guy you can get in the first round, like if you get a second first round pick who's just a dog out there, you can take that guy. They obviously need corners. I like the guard. I like the young middle linebacker. You know, look, They need running. They need everything. Like you said, everything in cleats. There's not one position that's like, well, we're good here. We don't need to take anybody. All right, unless you're Cam and you're like, okay, we're good. But I don't see how you can be anywhere and be like, okay, we don't need to take anybody. I mean, if there was an elite tackle to take, you could take him.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, there's nothing wrong with being better at that position.
So on the Vanderbilt front, they get the win against Auburn. They survive in overtime, and now they're 8-2. If you win out and you get to 10-2, which is a big if here, but we'll see, you're going to have a pretty good shot to get in the college football playoff. What have you made, and I know one of them was a loss against Texas. The numbers for Diego Pavi are outrageous the last couple of games.
500 yards.
What do you make of the way that he's playing and how he's basically just kind of dragging Vanderbilt along with him right now?
I would say no one in college football means more to their team than Diego Pavia. I mean, no one. Yeah, I mean, he's electric. They put the game entirely in his hands to win. The decision to not kick the field goal late was horrific, in my opinion. But they got away with it, and Pavia was part of the reason. You know, they're still good at the line of scrimmage. That hasn't changed. But the outside has been the concern. You know, from the get go, when they got to facing teams with speed and elite talent on the outside, and that's what's getting them right now is they can't stop anybody out there on the edges. And they've got to figure out a way to stop people on the edges. But Pavia, I mean, how do you keep him off your Heisman ballot? I know there's other quarterbacks to look at, but there's nobody who means more to his team than that guy. I mean, like I said, he just had 500 yards of offense against one of the best defenses in the Southeastern Conference. I mean, he doesn't have a first-round receiver that he's throwing to. And he does it with different guys every game. And he can run, he can draw people and pitch it, he makes the throws. I mean, there pretty much isn't anything they can't do with him. And he does it all. He does it all. He is spectacular. Whatever NIL money he's getting is a bargain for them. You cannot say enough about how good he is, you know, and how good he's been and what he has meant to that program. If you don't know, you're not watching.
Well said. I mean, to me, he's moved up the Heisman list. Even in the last 2 weeks, one of those as a loss.
Yes. Because he proved he can do it with his arm.
Yeah, he's carrying this team right now. Yeah.
That performance Saturday was ridiculous. Ridiculous.
No doubt about it. Corey, great stuff as always. We appreciate you taking time to be with us today here on the program, and I hope you enjoy Monday Night Football tonight.
Eagles-Packers. That's a good one. Can I ask you guys a quick question?
Sure.
Okay. So the last 2 weeks, we have seen ridiculous outcomes in the National Football League.
Yes.
You know, whether it be the Saints winning this weekend or the Jets winning with 54 yards passing or the Dolphins boat racing the Bills – Does that mean the Titans win another game?
Probably.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's probably a good reminder of what this league is. Yeah. I bet you they win two. I think they win two games from here.
We made our final predictions, and I said 3-14. And that wasn't based on the Titans. That was based on the NFL. Because this is what happens. You know, because we always talk about the razor-thin line between good and bad in this league. And, I mean, you saw it in the one win that they had. They had one good quarter. It was enough to win them a football game.
Yeah.
And so, you know, now they very well could go 1-16. But I'm just like, man, this league is nuts. It's nuts. It is.
It's
hard to believe.
The Chicago Bears having six wins, that team?
Yeah.
Yes, this league is nuts.
Here we go.
Well, I mean, the last 2 weeks, what do they have, like four touchdowns in the last 5 minutes?
Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah. To fight back against the mighty Giants.
Carolina Panthers have beaten the Green Bay Packers and lost to the New Orleans Saints in a two-week span.
Well, the Chargers are the same way. They've lost to the Commanders and the Giants.
Yeah.
But they've beaten the Chiefs and a couple other really good teams.
And by the way, mighty Vrabel, 8-2, his losses are at home to the Breeders and Panthers.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. That is exactly my point. And doesn't this seem like this type of year where a 6 or 7 seed wins the Super Bowl?
Yeah, it kind of does. Kind of does. Yeah. Which that we'll 6 or 7 seed might end up being like the Kansas City Chiefs, so that'll be something.
Could be the
Bears.
Could be the Bears.
No, yeah. The Chiefs versus Bears in the Super Bowl.
There we go.
Looking forward to the Matt Nagy Bowl.
Yes.
Corey, thank you, sir.
Later.
Corey Curtis brought to you by Tennessee Men's Clinic joins us every Monday morning at 8 o'clock. We'll react to what Corey had to say. Alex Doherty from the Tennessean will be with us at 8:30. All that ahead, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Appreciate Corey Curtis for being with us in the last segment. Alex Doherty from the Tennessean coming up at 8:30. We'll get into the Predators with him. Taking your thoughts in the meantime, 615-737-1025. One texter says, so what I'm hearing is Pavia to the Titans. Dennis on the text line says, who's a better quarterback, Cam Ward or Diego Pavia? Pavia's playing great.
Well, I answered him. Pavia may be a better college quarterback. Again, like, you know, Corey said he's not throwing a first round. He is throwing a first round tight end. That is worth mentioning, or, you know, at least
what we think to be.
He's a prominent pick. He's going to be a pretty early round pick, I would say, Eli Stivers. But, yes, the way he's carried this team, completely turned this whole thing around, I would say I'd give Pavia better college quarterback, but not close to better NFL prospect. Yep. Two very different things. He says that's what's depressing. The pro team here is number one pick QB, but the best QB in the city is a guy who might not even get drafted. Yeah, I mean, I think Pavia – I would guess right now, you know, 6th, 7th round pick. Could be UDFA. And I'd love to be wrong, but that's probably right now the way it's.
Yeah. I mean,
even through all this, because, you know, the measurables still are the measurables. I mean, there's some guidelines there that.
What's his hand size? Do we know?
That I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know. I mean, he doesn't seem to fumble the ball much.
He's 6 feet tall, so he's listed at 6'2", 207. So, I mean, look, we see 6 feet tall quarterbacks in the NFL all over the place.
We do.
I'm with you. I don't think
he's 6 feet.
I'm with you. I'm just telling you what he's listed as. Yeah. Who knows? Yeah. We'll get the official measurement at the combine.
Yeah,
assuming he's not playing college football.
Is this? 24/7 Sports has like a, high school recruiting thing from the national recruiting. Hand size, 9.5.
Oh, he's fine.
Massive.
Yeah, he's fine.
Mitts out there. You know, the thing about Pavia
is – maybe he is going to be drafted high. Who knows?
Well, look, the thing is, and I've heard this from, you know, I've heard this from NFL people, is, you know, can he actually make all the throws? He doesn't have a cannon arm. But right. I tell you what, the accuracy on the deep ball and just – like, he has gotten a lot better. He is – again, I think I've said this on the show, and I've been told this from inside the program – you know, last year it was like, man, if pro scouts came by, you know, they're looking at other people. And it's like, oh, man, you got to love that kid. But, like, they're actually like, okay, let's talk about Diego now.
Sure.
There's a difference. And there should be. Like, I would – if I were an NFL team, I would not hate having that guy in my locker room.
No.
It's just that, yeah, I don't think it's going to be a high pick.
I don't think so either.
Again, please, I'd love to be wrong. Wrong a lot. Love to be wrong on this one.
It would be awesome if they go through the draft process and somebody's like, you know what, 2nd round, Diego Pavia, let's do it.
He's going to be a quarterback / our box safety. Travis Hunter, move the hell over, baby. This guy's playing every snap of special teams too. He'd crush everybody out there.
Yeah, man. I mean, look, he's playing great right now. I thought when they lost the Texas game, it's like, well, his Heisman chance is probably done, right? Yeah. Like, I mean, Ty Simpson's going to be in the mix. Julian Sayin, I mean, Ohio State's probably going undefeated. You know, they're going to be in the mix. And those two guys specifically, and you throw Mendoza in there too, those are three. If those three guys are probably going to be what it comes down to at the end of the day, if I had to guess.
And Jeremiah Love too. And
Marcel Reed. Like, Marcel you throw Reed some other too, guys in there.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the number – people were complaining earlier. We were talking about Pavia for Heisman all season long, and people would text back and say, well, look at the numbers. Like, the numbers aren't that good. Well, look at the numbers the last 2 weeks. They're pretty darn good from Diego Pavia.
Look, if they win the next two and he's great in those games and he, like, does some crazy stuff to win a game in Knoxville, he might get my vote. I know that's a homer, you know. Again, I'm not saying 100% because I have to go look. I don't know. Does Ty Simpson have this insane game to beat Texas A&M? I mean, there's a lot. I mean, you know, the two guys, the Ohio State and Indiana guys, are facing each other. But I do. Ohio State, it is just easy to play quarterback at Ohio State. And it's the same thing in Alabama. Look at the talent that's around him. It's absurd. And I'll say this, too, for Mendoza. I mean, Kurt Cignetti, it's small sample size, but I think he's as good a schematic offensive coach as there is in football right
now.
And so he is giving his – again, he got Curtis Rourke kind of out of nowhere, you know, blew his knee out, was at Ohio, brings him in, and he's awesome last year, and he gets drafted. Off the radar completely. Mendoza was on nobody's radar as a top pick. Nobody's radar. He comes in, he's incredible, but how much of that – you have to give a ton of credit to Cignetti, right? You have to. All of which – and I'm not saying there's not other good things happening at Vanderbilt. I mean, Clark Lee's done an amazing job. They have other good players. I don't think there's a player who carries a team more than he does. And if he carries this team to the playoff, you know, if he doesn't get to New York, it's criminal. But I think he would have a case to potentially win it.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll be joined by Alex Doherty from the Tennessean coming up next. Get his thoughts on the Predators as they are in New York tonight, taking on a Rangers team that has not won a home game yet. And then they're taking off to Sweden after the game, take on the Pittsburgh Penguins. We'll get into all that. What's going on with the team? What are some moves that could be made here very shortly? All that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Monday morning. Preds in action tonight, taking on the New York Rangers, who have not won a game at home so far this year. So we'll see how that goes. And then they are off to Sweden after that. And to help us talk more about that, we head to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in our friend Alex Doherty from the Tennessean, who does a great job covering the Nashville Predators. Alex, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Doing great. How are you all doing?
Awesome, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. So let's start here. The Preds have lost four in a row. They've gotten a couple points out of it with some games that have gone to overtime, but they just can't really seem to put it together in terms of, you know, when they're defending well, the offense doesn't follow. And when they're scoring goals, it seems like there are lapses defensively, and that has led to five wins in their first 17 games here. So what do you make of where the Predators are, how they've started the season, and how quickly could we be on the verge of some moves here, be that a firing of a head coach, be that some trades, be that some players being brought up from Milwaukee? Where do you think we are right now with the Predators?
Yeah, speaking of Milwaukee, the Milwaukee Admirals have more wins than the Nashville Predators right now, Joe. So watch out for that. They got six wins in the first nine games. The Predators only have five. So.
Oh, I know. We got a special all show devoted completely to them on Thursday. So there thanks for helping me preview it.
look, I would say that this season I would put under the category of I think the process is a little better. Like things that are that sort of the underlying numbers we're seeing are a little better than they were last year, but the results are not any different. I mean, they have five wins through 17 games, and that's exactly where they were last year, right? They have a couple more points because of overtime losses. So, I mean, this is exactly what we kind of thought would happen, right? We knew that if you don't make any changes at general manager, at coach, at player, largely at players, except for a couple of defensemen, that you're going to get the same result, right? And that's exactly what's happened. They kind of went into the season just hoping that Steven Stamkos would be better, that Jonathan Marchessault would be better, that you'd get more offense from guys like Evangelista and Fedor Svechkov, and maybe Eric Holla could come in and do some things. But I mean, it just didn't happen. I mean, it has not happened yet. And if anything, the offense looks maybe even more lost, because especially without Roman Josi out there, who's missed several games now and should miss a few more. It's like, you know, what are you really expecting when you watch this team? Now, Saturday was the exception. They put up four goals. When you watch this team, like, you look at the line that's out there and you're just like, where's the offense coming from? Unless it's coming from Philip Forsberg or Ryan O'Reilly, it's not coming at all. I mean, there's just no one that can generate anything. They have times where they look like a good possession team in the offensive zone, But it almost never ends in a good chance that, you know, has to require a really tough save by the goaltender. It's just shots get floated to the net or they go directly into a defenseman's skate. And it's really frustrating to watch. Again, I think the process is a little better. Their shot attempt share is better. They're possessing the puck a little bit more, but it's just not leading to anything that leads to wins.
So I hate to like jump to the 30,000 foot view immediately, Alex, but where is this all going? Where is this heading here in the next couple months?
I mean, obviously they're not going to do anything until after Sweden, right? I mean, they're going on the trip. They're in New York tonight. They're going to take on the Rangers and they're going to play Pittsburgh in two games over in Sweden. Then they come home. They got a couple home games right before Thanksgiving. And then they go on the road again. So I think we're going to get at least the next five games, let's say, for the current setup. And by the current setup, I mean with Andrew Burnett as coach. Because we have to start thinking about it. I mean, like, there's Barry Trotz was extremely emphatic about how much he likes his young coach and everything. But when you have a result, when you continue to have results like this, and then you have Burnett coming out after the game on Saturday saying this, he doesn't really have an explanation as to why the offense looks like, or why they lose games like this. I mean, that's not good. I mean, it's just, there's nothing around, there's nothing, you can't defend it that much longer. Now, if they win like one or two games here, I think that buys them some time. I think that's how slow this is going to take. Barry Trotz is going to take a little bit longer than most. And let's say they go to Sweden and they split with Pittsburgh and they come back home and they beat the Avalanche and then maybe they keep it close with the Panthers. Then we're going to keep it going. We're going to keep it going until Christmas. And then, but ultimately, where this is going is if there's not a substantial change by, I would say, January, like in terms of the standings, in terms of the play of the team, the results of the team. Yeah, you're gonna have some more changes. You're gonna see Ryan O'Reilly maybe shipped off. Maybe they talk to Steven Stamkos. Maybe they see if they can move Eric Halla, which they probably should do anyways because he's on an expiring contract. But things like that. You're gonna see some bigger names move. In which case, you'd have to have some guys come up from winning Milwaukee Admiral.
So I want to stick on Stamkos for a minute because I think everybody would agree it's not working out here. It's not going well. You watch him play and there are plenty of nights where he just doesn't look dangerous at all. And then, Alex, like you go check the NHL edge numbers and the skating. It's like, well, his skating's still pretty good, man. Like he's moving around pretty well out there by the numbers. And the two goals that he scored last week, I mean, you tell me. I can count on probably one hand the amount of guys in the league that could score those goals.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing with him because you watch him and it's like, well, I think most people assume he's 35 years old and he's just lost it. And I understand why they think that. And then you watch him with the two one-timers he had last week. And the more and more I look at him, like how much of this is just they have no one that can get him the puck? Like I just wonder how much that of it is that.
It has to be that. I mean, that's what it is at this point. I mean, he had guys in Tampa that were able to create and give him the puck at 5-on-5, even though those numbers were dwindling towards the end. And the power play numbers were what were boosting him at the end with Tampa, right? Like his power play production was great. We're starting to see a little bit of that now. The goal he had the other night was just sensational, and the tying goal against Minnesota was the same, not a power play, but a 6-on-5 situation. So at 5-on-5, I mean, look, he's had his centers over the last few years, few months with the Nashville Predators have been Tommy Novak. He's had some time with Ryan O'Reilly, and then he's had Svechkov. He's had Eric Halla. Now, these are not offensive dynamos, right? I mean, like Ryan O'Reilly is just fine offensively, but honestly, like even at this stage, O'Reilly is doing as much as he can to produce his own offense. Like, I just think it's not a good fit. There's no one on this roster that can make the plays necessary to give him the puck. And I don't even know if there's anyone – obviously there's no one in Milwaukee that can do that too. They'd have to go outside the organization to find someone that could do that, which maybe that's the solution, right? Maybe if they get down to it and they decide, okay, we got to trade Ryan O'Reilly and get a haul for him, they can go get a young offensive center that can get work with Steven Stamkos so that they can make these last couple seasons with Stamkos a little bit more bearable, right, and give him the puck more. That's about what they're going to have to do, because they don't have anyone ready right now that is close to what he needs in order to really maximize his 5-on-5 play. I agree with you, though. It's not like an effort thing. I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with Steven Stamkos. I think he looks great. I mean, we all saw the shooting. It's just like, at this point in his career, what does he need? What he needs is not on the roster right now.
Is that scenario you just said, Alex, is that feasible? Is that attainable? Like a young centerman? I mean, you know, all due respect to Mr. O'Reilly,
yeah.
Mr. One Good Year of NHL. I mean, he's a good player. Like, does he bring a haul back? Like, is there someone out there you could get who could actually come in here and right now help you down the middle?
Yeah, probably not right now, no. I mean, maybe haul is not the right word. I think you could get a pick and you could get a good young prospect for him. And maybe that's someone that you could see as an offensive player. Especially because O'Reilly has another year left on his contract, so like it's not just a rental.
They're going to get a lot for him if they move him at the deadline.
Yeah, especially the way he's playing. I mean, like he has been very good. He's number one or number two on the team in points, and he's still got a ton left in the tank, and he's a proven player in the playoffs. I think a lot of teams would want him. I mean, I have no idea where he'd want to go. But, you know, New Jersey, Carolina, Pittsburgh maybe, you know, anywhere like that would be willing to buy a guy like that at the deadline and say, you know, let's go win in the playoffs.
Yeah, like the other part of this too, you know, it feels like, and you could, I don't know about you, Alex, you could kind of feel it in the room the other night. Like they're running out of answers. Like, you know, you defend well one night, you can't score. You know, Stamkos was talking about that. You score four and then you don't win that game. And they're 5-8-4, and they're 5-8-4. They're running out of time to really get this thing corrected here, because the other part of this is the West is absolutely loaded. Like, their division's loaded. Now you've got teams like Anaheim that are just, you know, Quenville's got them firing on all cylinders. They're 11-3-1 to begin the year. I mean, the other part of it, like, there are some good teams right now that aren't even in the playoff mix. Like, Edmonton's just above the Predators right now. We all know how good Edmonton is. So I guess what I'm saying is, it is almost, to me, living in fantasy land to think that this team is just going to snap out of it at some point this year and be good and be challenging for a playoff spot. And I just wonder, mentality-wise, with some of these veteran players that they have, how long is it before they just start to shift and how many of them want out at that point?
Yeah, I think, you know, if we asked them that, they'd probably be like, well, we're just going to take one game at a time, and it's, you know, we got to just try to win the game ahead of us, right? But yeah, you mentioned Anaheim, like even Chicago right now.
Yeah.
Chicago's 8-5. You know, Utah is really good. You know, you've got the King out West. There's a ton of teams that are better than the Predators right now. The Kings, the Kraken are pretty good. Vegas obviously is very good. Anaheim, like you said, it's like there are so many teams ahead of them, not only in the standings, but in their development of their young teams. I mean, like, Anaheim's a good example. Like, they have so many good young players that are playing good right now, and they're just, like, they're ready to go, right? They've got a good young goaltender, too. So it's like the Predators are in probably the worst position to try to just – they have to just hope that it gets better, and because they can't really move anything around. They're landlocked here in terms of what they've done with their contracts. And, you know, we've had – you know, conversations about, like, whether Barry Trotz is the guy for this job. I think that the jury's still out on that. I think that honestly, his draft picks so far have looked pretty good. I mean, if we're going to give him credit for things, like, the drafting has been pretty solid so far. Though a lot of these guys who they drafted have looked really good in their respective leagues. Like, Igor Surin right now is tearing up the KHL, yep. And they got some good prospects. I mean, like, so if you give him credit for that. I mean, you have to give him credit for things like that, but the roster construction side of this has been, I mean, it's been pretty close to a disaster so far, and that's, you can't ignore that, because that's how you win games is building a roster that makes sense and that can win games in the regular season enough to get to the playoffs and then win the playoffs. So right now it's nowhere close to what you need.
All right, last thing for you here, and I want to ask you this because this is it's becoming a larger talking point around the league. I saw Jesse Granger put this out, and pretty much everybody in Edmonton's talking about this right now. The goalie situation in Edmonton is bad. I mean, Stuart Skinner is not good. They just gave up 9 to Colorado the other night. And the conversation has already started in Edmonton and around the league of the Oilers need to do whatever it takes to go at UC Saros. So if you're Barry Trotz and the Predators, do you listen to that? Like, how much consideration do you give to that if Edmonton approaches you pretty aggressively trying to get your
come
goal?
On down, Connor?
I yeah, I mean, just if they could ship us ship the Predators Leon Draisaitl, that'd be just fine. I mean, yeah, you certainly listen to it. I would be willing to bet that the price will be just too high right now. I think that the balance here is that Saros has the long contract, right? Like, would they be willing to take that on? And he hasn't been like outstanding, right? He's probably been better than Stuart Skinner, but is he worth like, you know, giving up a bunch for him? Because you've got the contract, and that just kind of muddies things. Like, how do you balance the return with what they have to take on in order to take that goalie? I mean, I would if I was running things, I would definitely consider doing that, especially because like the Predators goaltending has not really been the issue. I mean, Justice Onenen has not been great to start this season. Not nearly as good as he was last year, but it has been the offense that's the issue. So if you can find a way to improve your offense by dealing the goaltender, I think you have to do it. And also, like, they've got some good prospects on the way. The goaltender they just drafted is like, he's just like breaking records up at Michigan right now. He looks really good. So I think there's definitely something to say about, you don't need to think about UC Saros being the guy for 6 years and thinking that that's the thing that's holding you back. You've got options there. So I would definitely consider it.
Alex Doherty does a great job covering the Predators for the Tennessee, and he has been our guest. Alex, thank you for being with us this morning, and we will talk to you soon, my friend.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot. Talk to you later.
We'll react to what Alex had to say, get your final thoughts on the NFL, your final thoughts on Vanderbilt, the Predators, any way you want to take it, coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you. Appreciate Alex Doherty for being with us in the last segment. Let's head to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in Trey to the program. Trey, good morning. Thank you for calling in.
There's no problem. Hey, good morning, good morning. Hey, I just want to say that I wanted to comment on Cam Ward, and I just wanted to say that I think that he has the physical attribute to be, the quarterback in this league for a long time. But I don't think he has it upstairs, really, mentally. As far as, like, when the coach calls a play, and I don't think he can visualize that play and then execute those plays on the field. And I think that, you know, eventually he probably will get it. But how long do we have to wait for it, you know? And do y'all think that he's going to progress in the future or not? And I just want to say that, you know, this is the bare minimum I would like to see from Cam Ward. I want him to win 2 consecutive games in a row and throw for 250 yards in both of those games. Do y'all think he's capable of doing that? And I shut up, and y'all have a good day. Thank you.
Thank you, Trey. Joe, your thoughts?
I mean, he didn't even play this weekend. can we give the kid a break for a week? Like, no, I don't. To answer your question, Trey, yeah, I mean, could he progress? Sure. You want him to win 2 straight games and throw for 250 yards? Do you take into account the team that's around him? I'm not saying that he doesn't have a hand in everything that's going on out there, but do you take that into account? I mean, you need to take that into account.
Yeah, I mean, this Tennessee Titans team winning 2 consecutive games. Can they win 2 games in general, first off? But winning 2 in a row the rest of the year?
As Jake Lyman points out behind me, it's been 3 years since that's happened.
That's not happened. It's just
it had nothing to do with Cam Ward.
Doesn't seem like that's gonna take place.
Yeah, but hey, I appreciate coming right out Monday with some more hatred for Cam Ward after he, you know, did not play football this weekend. He got some leftover Cam Ward issues. So let me quickly, Robbie, I want to go back on, you know, the Doherty point and O'Reilly and all that stuff.
Yep.
I don't doubt that, like, you can get prospects picks back for O'Reilly, but I do doubt that you can get a centerman who would make a difference for you down the middle while Stamkos is still active. Like, that,
I agree.
That to me, yes, seems like asking a lot.
No, I agree. No, I think, look, Ryan O'Reilly, people are going to be salivating over at the trade deadline this year. And the Predators could have traded him last year. They didn't do it. I understand why. He didn't want to go anywhere. He may not want to go anywhere this year, but he doesn't have a no-movement clause, and I know the Predators tried to do right by him last year and treat him as if he did have one. You got to move him this year. I'm sorry. Like, you got to move. If it continues to go this way, first off, he's playing well. Secondly, he's got 1 year left on his deal after this. They're going to have to move him.
And he's miserable after the games. The poor guy. Yeah, I mean, just for that alone, he needs a little change of scenery.
I think that's clearly been his entire life, but yes.
Yeah. Yeah,
like, they won the Stanley Cup. Like, yeah, I really deserve a Conn Smythe. Not really.
Like, yeah. Poor guy.
I didn't want to play Gloria.
I had one good shift the whole playoffs.
Did you see me lose that faceoff in the second period?
I think,
did you see that?
I'll put it this way. I think they will be able at the trade deadline to get a first-round pick plus for him. I think they will get a first-round pick plus pretty good prospect for him. And that's probably good enough to make the move at that point. Now, I'm with you. Like, the – I don't think they're getting a centerman that's going to make a difference for Steven Stamkos. And look, you know, I don't want to completely absolve Steven Stamkos of blame because he's not been good, not been perfect here. But again, he scored two goals last week where you look at it and it's like, well, he hasn't forgotten how to shoot the puck. I mean, it was just, I don't know if you saw that goal Saturday night. It was an absolute rocket. I mean, there are only a certain amount of guys in the league that can score that goal. And it's not a good fit here. Very obviously not a good fit.
Meanwhile, the Saros to Oilers thing. I mean,
the Edmonton is going crazy.
Got potential for us for some topics.
Their goalie is going. I mean, Edmonton's goalie's awful. He just had McDavid commit for a couple of years, but they're bad right now.
But see, to me, if they believe that Saros is the answer, then that's when you take the pain later to do it now.
Yeah.
You know, and with the cap going up the way it is, I don't think it's a prohibitive for the Oilers to do it. It's just a question of what are you getting back.
They're talking a lot about it right now in Edmonton. I know that. That's going to do it for us today here on the program. We will be back 6 a.m. tomorrow. Next man up with Jake Lyman coming up next. You're listening to 102.5 The Game.